to another episode of the Rare Disorder podcast of my Meet an Expert series. Today, I have a guest with me on the podcast, Mr. Rich Horgan. Rich is the founder and president of Cure Rare Disease, a nonprofit biotechnology company whose mission is to disrupt the paradigm of drug development for rare genetic diseases. Through collaborations with leading institutions, they aim to develop customized therapies in record time and change the status quo so that today's patients see tomorrow's cures. Rich, I'm so excited to have you on my podcast today. Just to start, and so my listeners can get to know you a bit, could you please give an introduction of yourself?
Sure, happy to, and appreciate the opportunity being here, Shivani. As you mentioned, I'm the founder and president of Cure Rare Disease. We are a nonprofit biotech developing personalized gene therapies for pediatric patients with rare and ultra rare diseases. And so this mission itself is pretty personal to me. I started it because I have a younger brother, Terry, who has a rare disease called Duchenne muscular dystrophy. For your listeners who may not be familiar with this, this is a muscle wasting condition that's caused by a mutation in the dystrophin gene. Dystrophin is a structural protein that helps to absorb shock that the use of our muscles go through, whether that's our skeletal muscles, like our biceps when we pick up something, or our heart beating through everyday life. And in an absence of this protein is ultimately what leads to Duchenne. And Duchenne is a progressive fatal disease for which there's really no treatment or cure for the entire population. And so that's how I got started in this space about 3 years ago.
All right, great. So this kind of leads into my next question for you. So you have like extensive background and experience in the rare disease community. So what like initially kind of got you immersed in the community? Like a story or a connection, just like a particular moment that kind of like got you immersed?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, there's not necessarily one specific incident that happened that kind of just jotted me into the industry. I would say it was really an iterative type of experience for me where I got to business school and sort of was faced with the question of, okay, you know, what do you want to do with your life? And given, of course, my brother had had the disease then for, you know, almost 20 years by that time. And so not being a scientist, I really had never considered developing or leading an organization that could implement technical solutions to diseases. But as I spent the 2 years networking and connecting with some of the greatest minds in genetics and clinical care and drug development and translation, it became clear to me that there's a missing piece in the drug development ecosystem. And that missing piece is, how do we develop effective therapeutics for really small populations? The way that drug development's done currently is that it's really a game of numbers, in that a disease that is as homogeneous as possible and affects as many people as possible is one that's a prime target for for-profit pharmaceutical companies. And that's just the nature of for-profit drug development, I think, and that is what it is. It's fine. But for me, that wasn't really a structure that was going to help save my brother. And so at the time, one of the people I connected with was a researcher at Boston Children's Hospital by the name of Tim Yu. And Tim was developing what would become the world's first personalized drug for a little girl with Batten's disease. And so I'm seeing this framework kind of being built as it was being, the bridge being built as it was being walked on, so to speak. I started to build my own team around that framework of ultra-personalized therapeutic development and really brought together some really great collaborators, folks from Yale, UMass Medical, in what became sort of like a relay race to develop a gene therapy that's based on CRISPR for Terry. My brother.
Okay. Could you like talk a little bit more about like this like technology of this gene therapy of CRISPR, like elaborate a little bit more on it?
Yeah, I think to kind of generalize the situation, genetic diseases are caused by a defect in some level of our DNA or the ensuing processes that are part of the body's natural function. So if there's a deletion within a gene, a duplication, a splice problem, basically you can think of a gene on the DNA level as a recipe. And that recipe book has a differing number of pages depending on the gene. Some pages are duplicated, some pages are deleted, and the body doesn't know to say, okay, this is a duplicated page, let's just skip it and go to the next one, or, oh, there's a page missing here, you know, how can we fix that? From the rudimentary sense, the body sees an error and just continues to read through it, and that error will result in a mutated protein, an absent protein, an overexpression of a protein, an underexpression of a protein. And so for us, the way that gene therapy works is we can deploy tools that fix those deletions, those duplications, those mutations. So in the sense of Terry, he has an inactivating mutation on exon 1 of the dystrophin gene. That isn't something that you can knock out or sort of cut out to read through. An inactivating mutation is quite difficult because it's like the starter in your car is out, or the first page of the recipe book that tells you all the ingredients is just missing. And so for us, we needed to basically employ a technology. That technology we ended up using is called CRISPR. We deployed a type of CRISPR called CRISPR transcriptional activation, which is a way to upregulate the production of transcript of RNA that would then result in the creation of protein, the functional unit. And so that's how the CRISPR transcriptional activator works. It goes in, and through a muscle biopsy, we discovered that Terry was upregulating an alternative form of dystrophin, the cortical isoform, and that became the therapeutic strategy to use the transcriptional activator to basically take what was sort of a drip, drip, drip and turn it into more of a steady stream of upregulation of this alternative protein. Now, still dystrophin, just a different type of dystrophin. It only varies by a couple base pairs. And given that we found it in the, given it functionally in the biopsy, we were pretty confident that there were not going to be immune responses to the upregulated protein, and that his body would be comfortable handling it. So that's Terry's strategy. We've got over a dozen patients in the pipeline now, and each patient requires their own sort of tailor-made strategy. But looking through the lens that we're working on with Terry, that's how we approached it.
Okay, got it. All right, so kind of going back to, like, the rare disease community, how would you say that, like, fostering so many connections and also meeting a ton of different people from, like, researchers to advocates to caregivers in the rare disease space has impacted you or just your view in general?
Yeah, I think the rare disease space is a unique space because it's such a heterogeneous space that everybody is in it for different reasons. There's over 7,000 different rare diseases impacting 30 million Americans as the traditional numbers go. And so you meet people at different parts of the journey and for different reasons. Some are parents trying to do what I'm doing, which is developing an effective therapeutic for their loved one. Others are researchers who have spent, 20, 30, 40 years in the field and have seen the rise and fall of zinc fingers to talons to now the excitement around CRISPR. And so what helped me was being able to meet as many people as possible and then sort of file them away in my mental Rolodex, I guess, so to speak. So that when the time came when, I would need a translational biologist or a regulatory subject matter expert, I could go back and call on that person or go to that person and get them to navigate me to somebody that I could bring on as a consultant or a partner, a collaborator of some sort. So it's a small world in the rare disease space, and there's a lot of good people in it.
All right, so kind of moving on to, like, your Cure Rare Disease, this organization that you have founded, what would you say that this organization really stands for in terms of, like, the values it holds up or the mission of it?
Yeah, I think for us, the mission is definitely acting to develop a robust framework and ecosystem by which families who are impacted by a disease that may only affect one person in the entire world can still leverage this framework and ecosystem to develop an effective gene therapy in quick enough time to save their loved one and ultimately one day be reimbursed by insurance. A lot of these gene therapy programs generally cost per patient anywhere between $2 to $3 million. And that's very expensive. And nowadays that's money raised by, moms, dads, brothers, sisters, friends, and families who believe and rally toward the cause. But, ultimately rare disease has a really high burden, not only on the individual, not only on the family, especially as caregivers oftentimes, but on the community as a whole. And so ultimately, what we want to do is show that, A, it is possible to do this, which, we're on the brink of doing that in the next next few months. B, we can scale it up. We can treat more patients through this framework. And then C, ultimately convince insurance companies that, hey, actually, this makes economic sense to pay for this because the burden of the disease outweighs the direct cost of the gene therapy. We did this in a not-for-profit because it's just a novel way to develop medicine, and we needed to be able to take the bets that we needed to take and to mature at the time we needed to mature without sort of the traditional pressures of return. Maybe there'll never be a return. If it's one patient, that's very possible. But it's still a missing piece in society's arsenal to figure out how do we pay for these. And if there's of interest, you know, their payers are watching. This is sort of the first wave of personalized gene therapies that we're seeing, but it's just the tip of the iceberg. There'll be many, many more behind this, not just from us, but globally.
Mm-hmm. All right, so how was Cure Rare Disease founded initially?
How was it founded? So, one day I decided I needed an organization. That organization was going to be a nonprofit. I had no idea about nonprofits, so I went online and I figured out how do you found a nonprofit, and that's how it was founded. But it was a small start. It was, you know, let's throw a gala. We need to raise some money. We didn't start with customized therapeutics in mind. I started Cure Disease before I met Tim. And so I knew I wanted to fund some sort of academic research at an early stage to drive it forward and catalyze it. And then once I had developed the network out more, it became clear that, okay, our mission, our essence to be, was the development of personalized or customized gene therapies.
All right. So what are some of Cure Rare Disease's main initiatives or just some of the resources that this organization provides for both patient and caregivers to advocate for themselves just gather some information?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we aren't your sort of typical nonprofit that does a lot of educational events or a lot of advocacy. We're very targeted and pragmatic in our approach. And so our first and foremost objective is to fund highly translational science that will help today's patients as well as tomorrow's. Beyond that, we have a really robust library of blogs, very authentic blogs that have been written by family members on all sorts of different topics, coping with a diagnosis, how do you sort of restructure your house to make it accessible, and what's it like to enroll in a gene therapy trial? All these sorts of topics are things that are generalized enough for families who are going through different parts of the rare disease journey, whether it's Duchenne or another disease, to be able to take advantage of. And that is something that we're really proud of. These aren't sort of artificial or sort of changed perspectives. These are genuine perspectives from people living every day with the challenge that is rare disease. So between those two resources, that's primarily what we offer to the community.
All right, so if a patient listening today would want to become involved with Cure Rare Disease, what would you recommend as the first step to kind of get involved?
Yeah, I'd say reach out. Some of our most stellar individuals, actually, we have a high school intern who just reached out one day from Massachusetts here, and she's fantastic. She really picked up the ball and ran with it. And this is an organization that really attracts the entrepreneurially minded folks who want to make a difference. This is an organization where we spend a lot on sort of frills and other unnecessary things. Everybody here knows that we raise the money to go to the science and really don't mess around with a lot of the little stuff. So yeah, I'd encourage people just to reach out. One person can make a very big difference. And that's, I think, reassuring kind of this age where it feels like oftentimes that's not possible.
Okay. And then, so what would you say that are some major achievements or accomplishments of Cure Rare Disease since it has started up?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'd say, you know, we've brought together a novel research community that is often tough to do. These people genuinely work together. They genuinely collaborate. It's not just kind of the marketing behind it. We've advanced the understanding of CRISPR and systemic delivery of CRISPR to new levels and helped to guide the FDA's thinking in terms of how do we approach new modality, the new modality being CRISPR, and also helped to advanced thinking around other enabling factors of gene therapy delivery, like neutralizing antibodies. This was a topic that was rarely spoken about a year ago, And now it's very commonly known in the field. And so we're quite proud to have raised the public perception and awareness of neutralizing antibodies as they relate to the inhibition of AAV delivery. And where we're going in the future is really the first dosing, one of the first, if not the first, CRISPR transcriptional activator in a human, advancing thinking around an understanding of novel capsids, how do we more effectively deliver gene therapies throughout the body? And ultimately, how do we implement a new reimbursement mechanism to allow not only our programs, but really other programs in the U.S. at least, to be someday reimbursed through traditional mechanisms.
Okay, great. And then just kind of as we close out now, I was wondering if you have any resources to share with my podcast audience today, primarily comprised of patients, caregivers, and organizations.
Yeah, I'd say you can find a lot of our resources on our website, curerarediseases.org, the blogs I mentioned. We're very transparent about the science. One of the things we try to do is really decrease the opacity that comes with drug development. I think a lot of people often think that, you know, it's kind of a black box into which money goes and out of which a cure comes. It's not that simple. And so it's important that the folks you mentioned understand the process, because in understanding the process, you can ask the questions that need to be asked. And asking questions is a powerful way to really induce good actions from different parts of the drug development ecosystem. A lot of what you can find is on our website. We're very active on social media, all under Cure Rare Disease. And if folks want to be involved or are interested in involving, whether volunteering or being more involved in that, then encourage them to reach out.
All right, great. So I would like to thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast, Rich, and providing like all this wonderful information about Cure Rare Disease and also your work in the rare disease space. So thank you for joining me today.
Thanks a lot, Shalini. Appreciate you having me.